From Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles, this is Free Speech Radio News for Monday, December 8, 2008. Midwest auto workers are on Capitol Hill urging Congress to approve an industry bailout. We begin our week-long series on human rights around the globe today and head to Chile, one of the least tolerant countries in Latin America when it comes to gay rights. And workers in Chicago occupy a factory after management closes the doors and stops production. I'm Aura Bogado. Stay tuned for those stories and more, but first, this news.
I'm Renee Feltz with headlines from Free Speech Radio News. Five Guantanamo detainees charged with planning the September 11th attacks have asked a military judge to accept their confessions. Their request came this morning during what was expected to be a routine hearing. But when asked to explain their statement, the self-described leader of the attacks, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, replied, quote, "We don't want to waste our time with motions. All of you are paid by the U.S. government. I'm not trusting any American," unquote. Today's request appears to be an effort to challenge the legitimacy of the military commissions in the final month of the Bush administration. In an election delayed by Hurricane Gustav and held over the weekend, voters in Louisiana ousted indicted Democratic Congressmember William Jefferson. They chose Republican An Co to replace him. Co will become the first Vietnamese-American elected to Congress. Green Party candidate Malik Rahim placed third in the race. And in Ohio, a congressional seat traditionally held by Republicans was added to the Democratic column today. The decision in the close race for the state's 15th congressional district comes after some 20,000 provisional ballots were counted over the weekend. Evan Davis has more from Columbus.
Progressive Democrat Mary Jo Kilroy has been declared the winner in the race to represent the Central Ohio Congressional District, formerly held by 4th-ranked Republican Representative Deborah Price. Kilroy's victory comes after thousands of so-called provisional votes in Franklin County were counted over the weekend. The votes had been held in limbo since November 4th due to a series of Republican legal challenges. They gave Kilroy a more than 2,000-vote advantage over her opponent, Republican State Legislator Steve Stivers. Kilroy chairs the local chapter of the National Lawyers Guild. As a member of the Columbus Public School Board, she proposed policies to protect gay and lesbian students from sexual harassment. She cites veteran Congressperson Marcy Kaptur from Toledo as a role model for her opposition to NAFTA and her vote against the 2002 Iraq War resolution. Kilroy also supports renewable energy technologies.
We need to help people transition into a clean energy economy, to make sure that we are investing in wind and solar, to make sure that we have renewable sources of clean energy.
Kilroy supporters speculate that the slim margin of victory in this year's race may cause her to keep a relatively low profile during her first term in Congress. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Evan Davis in Columbus, Ohio.
Environmental activists broke into Great Britain's third busiest airport early Monday and occupied one of its runways. From London, Naomi Fowler reports.
After breaking into London's Stansted Airport, protesters from campaign group Plain Stupid camped on the runway, surrounding themselves with fortified security fencing. The group said its aim was to prevent the release of thousands of tons of greenhouse gas emissions into the atmosphere by forcing the airport to close for as long as possible. Protester Olivia Chessel spoke with reporters just before she was arrested by police.
We've asked the specialists, we've asked the experts and the scientists, and all the evidence shows that we need to cut our CO2 immediately. We want everybody to be cutting their carbon emissions. I'm afraid the police are taking my telephone and out!
The police arrested 57 protesters and eventually cleared the runway. Plain Stupid alleges security staff rammed them with a snowplough in an attempt to stop the protest. More than 50 flights were cancelled today, and there'll be limited availability of flights this week. This is Naomi Fowler in London for Free Speech Radio News.
Two human heads left in a plastic bag on a street in southern Mexico may be the work of an anti-drug cartel guerrilla movement. From Mexico City, Daniel Hernandez reports.
The unidentified heads were found Sunday on a busy avenue in the city of Chilpancingo, the capital of the state of Guerrero. Authorities said a so-called narco message was left with the heads that read, "This is what will happen to all kidnappers and carjackers," along with a string of obscenities. No organized criminal syndicate or cartel has claimed responsibility for the severed heads, and authorities have not named any of the groups battling among themselves in Mexico's bloody drug war as suspects. Instead, there is speculation that Heads may be the first strike by a little-known guerrilla movement calling itself the Ejército Popular Antidrogas, or the Popular Anti-Drug Army. Since October, the group has left messages around Guerrero, a mountainous and largely poor state with a long tradition of grassroots guerrilla movements. In early November, a message left by the group in various towns read, "We summon the people of Mexico to the war against the narco industry. We are parents that do not want drugs among our children. We know who killed innocents, and against them goes our power and rage." So far, the Ejército Popular Antidrogas has not claimed responsibility for the Heads found in Chilpancingo. In Mexico City, I'm Daniel Hernandez for Free Speech Radio News.
And those are the headlines from Free Speech Radio News. From New York, I'm Renee Feltz.
Workers at Chicago's Republic Windows and Doors are occupying the factory after management closed operations Friday. Plants and other businesses with 100 or more employees are required by federal law to provide workers with a 60-day notice before layoffs and closures, but Republic Windows and Doors says it had no choice but to close the plant because Bank of America, the company's principal creditor, is refusing to make the company a loan. After workers picketed a Bank of America headquarters last Wednesday, the banking giant offered to sit down with Republic representatives and workers in a meeting arranged by Illinois Representative Luis Gutierrez. But company representatives never showed up to the meeting, and management shut the plant's doors. That's when workers decided to occupy the factory in protest, demanding the $1.5 million they're owed in severance and vacation pay. Support has now poured in from around the nation. Richard Berg is with Teamsters 743, one of several unions backing the Chicago Republic Windows and Doors workers.
I have a message for Bank America. We're going to be here until as long as it takes. The workers in Chicago are united. All the unions that are here are united. We're going to stay here. We're going to stand behind our sisters and brothers in UE until justice is done. Yeah.
Supporters outside Republic Windows and Doors, where workers have occupied the factory since Friday. Luis Munoz is one of those workers. He's operated machines at the plant's glass line for 34 years, and he's one of nearly 300 workers that decided to occupy the factory.
The company decided to close down, you know, from one moment to another one. So we don't know the reason yet exactly, you know, but we're going to find out. You probably, you know, today, union lawyers and Luis Gutierrez, the congressman, you know, they're going to sit down, and the owners of this company, they're going to sit down, you know, with Bank of America. They're going to try, you know, to resolve this problem, you know, and it probably, you know, they find out right there, you know, the reason why the company decided to close the doors.
Lalo, you were given just 3 days' notice, and the plant stopped operations on Friday, although there's a federal act that says that you should have at least 60 days' notice. The holidays are just a couple of weeks away. What does it mean for you and your family to lose your job now without severance and without vacation pay that you're owed?
Well, you know, it's going to be, you know, a serious problem, you know, for me and my family, because we lost the job already, you know, so we don't want to have any more income. And this holiday is coming, you know, the kids' families, you know, they expect, you know, Santa Claus coming, you know, and where it's going to be the surprise. So you probably, you know, we're not waiting for them. So, it's going to be hard for me too, you know, because to lose the job, you know, is something serious. It's not going to be easy. And the system we are right now, it's going to be bad because, again, you know, it's not going to be easy to find a job. It's going to be time, you know, to get another job. I mean, restart again, you know, so it's going to be hard, you know, for me and my family.
You've been getting a lot of support from politicians, from grassroots groups, from students, activists. How do you feel about this overwhelming amount of support that you've been getting?
Oh, I feel real good, you know. That's great, you know, to see all these people, you know, coming, you know, with a lot of support for any kind of drinks, you know, vegetables and everything, you know. There's a lot of communities, they coming and giving us the support. I feel real good giving us, you know, this kind of support. You know, a lot of members of the government, you know, they come every day here giving us their support and tell us they're going to do, you know, the impossible, you know, to get the money, you know, with the company owners, everyone to employees over here.
Luis Munoz is a worker occupying the Republic Windows and Glass factory he's worked at for 34 years. Meanwhile, Chicago's city council, backed by community and labor leaders, has drafted a resolution to divest the city's funds from Bank of America until the banking giant changes their practices and steers some of the financial resources they received from the $25 million in bailout money towards the Chicago workers' severance and vacation pay. You're listening to FSRN. A caravan of Midwest auto workers made their way to Washington. They're urging Congress to approve the auto industry bailout. They say if lawmakers authorized a $700 billion blank check to Wall Street, surely they can approve a fraction of that to help Detroit through hard times. Tanya Snyder reports.
Tony Browning has worked 34 years in the Chrysler assembly plant in Sterling Heights, Michigan. He's come to Washington, D.C. to ask Congress to approve a bridge loan to help the auto industry through the economic downturn.
We're here to get the loan for not just the company, but for the industry in a whole, where people can have a living wage and have better working conditions.
Browning and the other UAW members and retirees that caravanned with him say it was Wall Street that caused this crisis, not Detroit. They say the problem isn't the auto industry, it's the credit crunch. If people can't get financing, they can't buy cars. Bill Alford is the president of UAW Local 235 in Hamtramck, Michigan. He wants to remind skeptics that they're asking for a loan, not a blank check.
It's just ridiculous that the auto industry is getting tormented over getting a fraction of the money that we have given Wall Street, and it was a blank check. It was a walk in, take the money, walk out.
Pressure is mounting on workers to take further wage and benefit cuts. Automakers have asserted that workers make $70 an hour, a figure the workers find laughable. The $70 figure includes pensions and health care for retired workers and much more, all rolled into labor costs and somehow averaged out to equal $70 for each active worker. When Wendy Thompson retired after 33 years at an auto supplier, she was making $28 an hour, not $70. She says workers now make even less.
What happened? A worker that now comes to work in an auto plant, they are going to make less than half of what I made. They will not have a pension. Their health care is vastly inferior. This is not what I planned for the next generation.
Frank Hammer is a former president of UAW Local 909. He says the workers have made huge concessions already, and he doesn't think they should have to make any more.
It makes it sound so fair that everybody should come to the table and make sacrifices. What's not being recognized is that auto workers made incredible sacrifices just a year ago.
The White House and Congress are getting close to a deal to help the industry. Automakers won't get the $34 billion they've asked for, but Congress will likely get to vote on a $15 billion bridge loan to get them through the next few months. Lawmakers have been reluctant to provide the money, but the compromise package, which will include strengthened government oversight of the industry, is likely to pass. Senate Banking Committee Chair Chris Dodd told Face the Nation over the weekend that GM CEO Rick Wagoner should step down.
I think you've got to consider new leadership. If you're going to really restructure this, you've got to bring in a new team to do this, in my view.
For now, the automakers and the workers are rejecting Dodd's suggestion. If new leadership becomes a condition of the money, though, anything could happen. If the White House and congressional Democrats finalize the deal as expected, the Senate could take up the package Wednesday and the House soon after. For FSRN, I'm Tanya Snyder in Washington.
President-elect Barack Obama says the economy will get worse before it gets any better, and he's proposing an economic recovery infrastructure plan that some lawmakers are estimating will cost between $500 and $700 billion. The plan would modernize U.S. highways and byways, but that's not all. FSRN's Karen Miller looks at some of Obama's other economic improvement proposals.
President-elect Barack Obama says his economic recovery infrastructure plan needs to promote short-term job creation and long-term economic prosperity. But roads and bridges won't be the only things that will be worked on.
It includes making down payments on making our economy more energy efficient, school construction, laying broadband lines, instituting medical information technologies that can drive down costs. All of these things are designed to have long-term payoffs for taxpayers.
Obama says his plan won't be business as usual.
We are not going to simply write a bunch of checks and let them be spent without some very clear criteria as to how this money is going to benefit the overall economy and put people back to work.
Amanda Logan, economic research associate with the Center for American Progress, says some of these projects have been waiting for a long time.
Many have budget shortfalls where it'd be nice if we could weatherize, you know, all the public schools in this school district, but bottom line, you know, other spending decisions have had to come first. So that's an example of where, okay, we're ready, we're waiting, we just need the cash to go on this. Other projects, such as improving our nation's health information technology. These are things that we've been kind of talking about and maybe started on a small scale in particular communities, but they're kind of a new idea in that it's not something we have seen before across the country, but have been come to be regarded as something we should do when we can. And now's the time, it really looks like, to act on this.
Putting people to work in energy jobs is another way that Obama wants to boost the economy. Obama says he plans to develop renewable sources of energy, such as wind, solar, and geothermal, to generate jobs. Speaking Monday at a press conference, Senator Barbara Boxer, Democrat from California, said these efforts will accomplish two important goals.
Combating global warming is not only good for the economy, it's great for the economy. It produces jobs. It makes us stronger.
Senator Boxer has sent a letter to President-elect Barack Obama saying that her Environment and Public Works Committee is assessing infrastructure needs for the country through a series of hearings. For Free Speech Radio News in Washington, D.C., I'm Karen Miller.
The government says a crop of cottonseed was genetically modified by Monsanto and then accidentally fed to cows in Texas. Two more truckloads of the feed, meanwhile, have been delivered to Mexico. Monsanto engineered the seed, which has now become livestock feed, to contain a pesticide-producing protein. This news comes as environmentalists warn that the Bush administration is pushing for rules that will weaken oversight of such crops. Africa Jones has more.
Agrigiant Monsanto mixed genetically engineered cottonseed created to produce its own pesticide with other cotton crops. The experimental GE cotton is not authorized for human consumption, and some groups are worried that the GE crops will eventually enter the human food supply because cotton meal is used in animal feed. The FDA, EPA, and USDA released a joint statement saying that there was no food or safety concern. While the government continues to investigate the contamination, new regulations for GE crops could be released any day. The U.S. Department of Agriculture proposed the changes in October, which had a short 45-day comment period for the public. Karen Carey Silverman, a senior analyst with the Union of Concerned Scientists Food and Environmental Program, says that the new rules would weaken already loose regulations for genetically engineered crops.
They would actually allow the producers of new experimental crops to decide for themselves if their product should be regulated. Also, the regulations cover what we call pharmacrops. These are plants that are engineered specifically so that the plants produce drugs or industrial chemicals.
According to the California Department of Food and Agriculture, genetically engineered ingredients are in more than 70% of processed foods. Jeffrey Smith is executive director of the Institute for Responsible Technology, a nonprofit dedicated to educating the public about GE foods.
Soy and corn derivatives are almost omnipresent. And the other two major crops are canola and cottonseed oil. Starting at the end of 2008, they'll be harvesting sugar beets from genetically engineered beets and putting it into the sugar supply in the United States.
Genetically engineered seeds have been heralded as a possible way of ending hunger, but a USDA study found that they may actually decrease crop yields. Some environmentalists say there's not enough information to determine whether GE crops are safe for consumption and that the crops could disrupt ecosystems. Jeffrey Smith.
Tragically, the research on genetically engineered foods is very, very thin. There's no human clinical trials. There's no monitoring of the population after these foods are released. The Austrian government released a study showing that mice fed genetically engineered corn had impaired fertility in the third and fourth generation. So we're seeing problems potentially with fertility and the next generation, which might be affecting human beings.
The Food and Drug Administration says GE crops are safe for consumption. USDA did not return calls for comment by airtime. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Africa Jones.
The United Nations Climate Change Conference begins its second week in Poland today, with delegates from more than 150 nations in attendance. Participants are working toward a deal to take effect in 2013 after the Kyoto Protocol expires. But indigenous people warn that the UN's process for dealing with climate change excludes major stakeholders, their communities. Indigenous rights activists claim firsthand experience in dealing with climate change and want input into strategies moving forward. Natalia Viana has the story.
One big theme at this conference has been deforestation and how it contributes to climate change. RED, or reducing emissions from deforestation and degradation, is a widely supported proposal. It could set a carbon trading system to give credits to poor countries that reduce deforestation. But some at this conference are not at all happy with the idea. The International Indigenous Peoples Forum on Climate Change has called for the immediate suspension of all the RED negotiations until the indigenous people's rights are fully recognized. For them, carbon trading would violate their right to lands, territories, and self-determination. Plus, it is contrary to their cultures and beliefs.
Carbon trading is the capitalism of the air, the atmosphere. It conflicts with our indigenous traditional knowledge and worldview that teaches us that all life and all natural elements are sacred and must not be exploited.
Tom Goldtooth, director of the Indigenous Environmental Network, says some existing carbon offsetting projects are harmful to natives. He mentions the case of the Jeripachi wind power project funded by the World Bank in northern Colombia.
A tribe called the Wayu. And this concerns a big mega wind power initiative. But in the implementation of this initiative, there was some atrocities that took place, because in order to build these massive wind turbines, the companies and the government needed to clear the land of the indigenous people. So this was actually turned out to be a removal.
Others say that offsetting programs, also called clean development mechanisms, often neglect local communities and do not redistribute the money gained. Yuyun Ismawati is an activist from Indonesia.
The knowledge is not trickled down to the local level, so it's remained at the consultant, at the broker's level. And the project will threaten the people's, especially the poor's, livelihood. So if we are talking about the sustainable development, this is not really the example of sustainable development.
The Indigenous Forum also demands the creation of an expert group on indigenous peoples within the UN Forum to ensure that their rights and concerns are taken into account. So far, they have not been invited to the discussions. Tom Goldtooth.
World leaders here in Pakistan still are not listening to indigenous peoples who have maintained livelihoods that have sustained us for thousands of years.
UN Executive Secretary for Climate Change, Ivo de Boer, has welcomed the idea, but he warns indigenous peoples first need support from many countries in order to make the expert group come true. Today, only a few countries like Bolivia agree with the initiative. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Natalia Viana in Poznan, Poland.
This week marks the 60th anniversary of International Human Rights Day and the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights. The theme for this year is Dignity and Justice for All of Us. And this week, FSRN brings you a series on human rights issues facing communities around the globe. Today, we start our series in Chile. We'll look at discrimination against gays and lesbians and the LGBT community's struggle for equality. FSRN's Jorge Garretón reports on Chile's record of intolerance towards gays and lesbians, discrimination so severe that it's forced some young people out of school.
Lesbian, gay, and transgender people face more acts of violence and discrimination in Chile than anywhere else in the southern cone of the Americas. That's according to a new study released by a Catholic University of the North. The researchers found that some 8 out of 10 sexual minorities face some kind of act of discrimination or violence. Only 7% took action with the authorities. High school students who come out as gay or lesbian also face challenges. Some are bullied by classmates, including one young woman at a Santiago Catholic high school who committed suicide in November. For many, it is difficult to get an education as teachers force LGBT students out of the classroom. Yesenia Canales, a 16-year-old student at San Ramon All Girls High School in Santiago, the school principal forced Canales to take classes at home because, she says, she was a bad influence on her fellow students.
When my mother came home crying because the school principal told her I was a bad influence on the new girls coming to the school, that marked me. All the anger and rage I felt toward the principal grew, so I decided to contact gay rights organizations because I did not want to see another student go through what I did just because she's a lesbian. I did not want to see another student commit suicide.
This type of discrimination is common in Chile. Youth and adults alike face physical violence from people they know, like neighbors or family members, and of course, complete strangers. Another layer of intimidation comes from police, and some report discrimination from healthcare providers. Jaime Barrientos is a psychology professor from Antofagasta's Catholic University of the North. He's also director of the recently published study.
In all countries, discrimination is high, but in Chile, it is much higher. In our study, we included a question asking whether or not sexual minorities have been harassed because of their sexual orientation in schools, universities, and at work. That question is notable because respondents say that harassment is the single most important form of discrimination they face in their lives.
Chile's Congress recently eliminated all provisions in an anti-discrimination bill that would have protected sexual minorities. The bill has been under debate for the past 3 years. But now that senators removed gay rights protections, the bill is now moving. It also included provisions to prevent same-sex marriage. Rolando Jimenez is with the gay rights NGO Movil.
Hay un cambio cultural potente, profundo.
We're witnessing a major cultural change with the average person on the street, but we see an entrenched conservatism present in all institutions, in Congress, the executive, the judiciary, the armed forces. That means we are going to change tactics. The most important invisible gay rights organization in Chile is Fed Up. We are tired of always proposing integration and protection of sexual minorities. So from this time onward, and we have been thinking about it for a year now, we are moving toward direct action.
Jimenez does not discount outing with hard evidence politicians and judges who do not fight for gay rights and instead hide their sexual orientation. That is the only way, he says, they will get the attention of those in power to start talking seriously about the issue of gay rights in Chile. For FSRN, this is Jorge Garratón in Santiago.
And that wraps up today's newscast. From Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles, I'm Aura Abogado.